what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance. Drance covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. You all right there, Drancer?
Yeah, a little coughing fit right before the show came on completely suddenly. Yeah, so it goes.
How you doing?
Well, it's a rainy day. The Canucks face mathematical elimination this evening and against a Dallas team that I would expect to be pretty mad, given that they've had a run of flat performances. So this is just about the worst place for the team itself to be, right? Not good enough, not good enough to make the playoffs.
They can already be eliminated.
I don't know that that makes it. You know what? If you were already eliminated, you'd have a better draft pick. That would actually be preferable. True. So I don't know. I'm not feeling the jollies today, bud.
You're not feeling super optimistic?
I'm not.
Interesting.
No, I'm not. I'll be honest with you.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
What, a non-alcohol beer give you the jollies?
Not at work.
But after. As soon as you get in the car, ride home after.
If I had one at work, that's how you'd know that I'd
that things were really dire.
Yeah. Or that, like, you know, like, he's in a rough place.
Yeah.
Because that's a weird activity.
I'd be like, hey, you doing okay, buddy? Everything good?
No.
No, I'm drinking non-alcoholic beer at work. John Mattis from The Score will join us at 12:30. We can start putting on our Stanley Cup playoff preview hats. I don't know why I said it like that. We don't have hats, but you know what I mean.
Well, we're both wearing hats.
Yeah, we are. That's true.
Yeah.
But they're not Stanley Cup playoff preview related. But anyways.
You get a hat that says Stanley Cup, and I have a hat that says preview.
Playoff preview.
Yeah.
We'll talk to John Mattis about that at 12:30. Other than that, we've got some open segments on the show. So send your text in, as always, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Anything you want to run past us, thoughts about the Canucks summer coming up, hit us up, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. But right now, let's start with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 8th, and the headline is, the Canucks, they play the Stars in Dallas, and they will be officially eliminated from playoff contention with a regulation loss. So I actually can't even call this a true must-win game, because if you get an overtime loss, you're still alive. Still alive by 1 point if you lose an overtime here.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, their tragic number is 2. So yes, it's going to take a combination of them dropping 2 points and or, right, the Minnesota Wild picking up 2 points. Once the Wild hit 93 points, it's over.
It is over.
Or if the Canucks lose and can't get to 93 points, then it'll likewise, or can't get past 93 points anyway, it'll also be over. That's where we're at. We are right there. Yep. And you know, I think there's some interesting wrinkles. Again, this Dallas Stars team hasn't played well. The last little bit, they've got a glaring flaw in their back end. Looks like Miro Heiskanen will return at some point in round one. But, you know, given sort of the Jets win last night, it looks like they're probably facing this revamped Avalanche side in round one. I don't know that there's a worse first round opponent that any team in the league is poised to face. Maybe the Toronto Maple Leafs if the Florida Panthers, you know, tank. Sort of squares them up against the Maple Leafs in round one. That would be the only other analogy around the league. So that's a really tough break for the Stars. And so I'm expecting a pretty motivated team tonight, right? There's still incentive for them to scratch and claw and try to catch the Jets, unlikely as that may be. They're coming off a pair of really ugly performances. And they're at home. And they're good. And they've beaten the Canucks twice this year while, you know, flattening them pretty decisively in both of those contests. This is a tough day, I think, for the Canucks to be sort of playing their real first game with elimination on the line this season.
Yeah, it's. I mean, Dallas is a really good team, and yeah, there's injuries. You know, Miro Heiskanen is out of the lineup, but still, this is a really good team. As you said, they have reason to be motivated. They're not in just coast until the playoffs get here mode, right? They still have stuff to play for. They want to fine tune their performance. So this is a difficult spot for the Canucks. Now, we do want to, I don't know how much we want to talk about Casey DeSmith, but it is a Casey DeSmith
revenge
game.
I want to talk a lot about
potentially.
Casey DeSmith.
So do you want to do that here, or do you want to... we'll do it here. Okay, so I was going to include in the lineup notes, but we can talk about the Canucks lineup stuff, and there was an interesting roster move that the Canucks made. We'll get to that in a second, but it is former Canucks goalie, of course, the backup last year, started some games in the playoffs for them, Casey DeSmith, who's going to get the start for the Dallas Stars tonight. Casey DeSmith having a phenomenal season in the backup role for the Dallas Stars with a 921 save percentage through 24 games from Casey DeSmith. So he's having a really strong season, and he's got a chance to officially eliminate his old team from playoff contention.
Well,
today.
Not just his old team, but his old team that benched him after a career best performance. He stole game three for the Canucks in round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs after being mostly dependable as Thatcher Demko's backup through the season. He had that one rough night in Minnesota, and after that, we could see the leash get short for DeSmith in Vancouver. He comes in relief of Demko, and they lose game two to the Nashville Predators, but they win game three despite a flat, miserable performance. During that game, DeSmith picks up a minor nick, tells the team about it. The team decides to ride Shelovs the rest of the way. It was a decision that paid off in the short term despite Shelov's struggles this year. Nonetheless, DeSmith's gone, played behind this Pete DeBoer defensive system, and absolutely crushed it. Meanwhile, the Canucks are out of the playoffs with the performance of their second and third most frequently used goaltenders this season being a major reason why, right? They're an 86-point pace team in games that Thatcher Demko earns the decision in. They are a 45-point pace team with Shelovs having picked up only 5 of 18 available points, both of his wins coming against the Chicago Blackhawks. They're a 97-point team with Kevin Lankinen in net. Now, if you had DeSmith, do you sign Lankinen? Right? So it's not easy to just like go back and be like, well, if they'd had DeSmith and Lank, like that was never going to happen.
No, that wasn't on the offer. It would have been great, but it wasn't on offer.
They would have signed DeSmith, and then they would have rode with DeSmith and Shelovs, and we probably have a pretty similar outcome. I think you'd rather have Lankinen. So all's well that ends well. But, you know, DeSmith's departure as an unrestricted free agent, despite the Canucks making a late effort to lock him up, you know, in those halcyon days of June 2024, does kill a trade tree. Like, it's the end of a trade tree that I just think captures the moment we're at with this franchise, the precarious perch that this core sort of occupies, the lack of talent, the lack of consistency, the lack of sustained credibility that this organization has suffered through across the last 15 years.
If I recall correctly, he was acquired from the Habs as part of the Tanner Pearson salary dump.
That's correct.
So now I'm going back to Eric Goodbranson, and I can see where this is going.
You're actually going back further.
Yep.
You're going back to Ryan Kesler.
All right.
Right? Because it was the move, the first major trade of the Benning era, right, was also, you know, a move that really set Vancouver on a sort of post-golden age trajectory, right? They'd moved Luongo, they'd moved Schneider. So it wasn't the first move to begin to dismantle that core, but man, trading Ryan Kesler felt a lot different than trading a goaltenders, you know? So they trade Ryan Kesler and they get the pick and select Jared McCann. And it's then McCann with a second and a fourth to Florida for Goodbranson. Goodbranson comes in, struggles, right? It's obviously a disaster of a trade. And then the Canucks acquire Pearson for Goodbranson from Jim Rutherford and the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yep.
And Pearson comes in and actually plays pretty well. Was a good fit.
Really well.
Built chemistry with Bo Horvat, eventually built chemistry with JT Miller. And the club got to a point spinning their wheels where they had a chance to do what?
Trade him.
At the deadline.
At the deadline as a pending unrestricted free agent.
Potentially for the sort of return that the Columbus Blue Jackets got for Nick Foligno. Right? Like that was, if Pearson had been made available, especially because it was a bubble season with all the, you know, annoying quarantine regulations in place, Like, there was a lot of reasons why that Maple Leafs team might have preferred Pearson, who would have been far easier to get into their lineup and to get into their country, frankly, to Nick Foligno. So you're definitely talking about a late first or a second round pick being left on the table as an opportunity cost when the club made the extension to extend Pearson. Now, Pearson's Canucks career fizzles out for reasons that have nothing to do with him, realistically, right? He has surgery on a wrist. He returns to the ice too soon. The wrist becomes infected. It requires multiple surgeries to try and fix. Thankfully, Tanner Pearson, who we saw play on Rogers Arena ice just last night for the Vegas Golden Knights, is able to resuscitate his career, but not in Vancouver. He is dealt along with a 2025 third round pick that the Montreal Canadiens still hold, still an asset for a playoff team to utilize, for Casey DeSmith. And DeSmith comes in and plays well. But Canucks don't extend him. Canucks don't extend him. And now, across 15 years of Canucks history, this guy has an opportunity to push the Canucks into mathematical elimination. End one of the seasons that we've entered, certainly the season that we've entered in the last two decades, like since 2012, 2013, with the highest hopes for this club. Those hopes have potentially formally been dashed.
We'll
in
see.
In the event of a DeSmith victory.
Potentially tonight. At the hands of Casey DeSmith.
They've been dashed, but it may potentially come at the hands of DeSmith.
We'll see if it's DeSmith delivering the final blow or not.
And it just feels like, you know, we had the McCann performance in that Kraken game. So it's not the first time that I've brought this up, but connecting it all and just sort of that through line, all the decisions that get us here, right? The, you know, Kessler is not dealt at the deadline. Instead, he's dealt, you know, by a new general manager, and the return that Anaheim has to give up is the lower pick, right? The lower of their firsts, which becomes Jared McCann, who becomes a good player, but not in the Canucks because they gave up on him for a stay-at-home defenseman who's really a depth player and a decent one. I mean, he's had a good career.
Still in the league, yep.
Yeah, but he's not Jared McCann,
no.
And he didn't make sense for that team in that moment. Certainly didn't elevate the Canucks during his time here. They actually salvaged something out of that, but don't capitalize off of it because this team will never look beyond tomorrow at the trade deadline. Instead, extend a guy to a risky contract. A medical situation is wildly botched. The club ends up having to pay to get off of his deal, right? The team that they made that deal with that was interested in collecting future value is now better than them. Right, like, is now going to make the playoffs with a more interesting, vibrant future, including Ivan Demidov, who was released from his SKA contract today. And the Canucks are here, spinning their wheels, facing this player who sort of represents a quality decade of short-term thinking, who has a chance to get revenge on a club that iced him in the postseason and end their campaign.
I'm just glad Ivan Demidov is out of his ska contract. Doesn't have to keep playing ska music anymore. He can instead join the NHL. It's no longer beholden to the mighty, mighty Boston. He can come over.
What is down?
That's the only. That's the only ska. That's the only ska band I know.
Isn't it called Down with Jake? Down with who? Down with.
This feels more just like straight reggae to me.
Titled Ska Party.
Down with Webster.
Down with Webster.
Are they a ska band?
Yes. I think so. They're a Canadian band.
I don't think they are.
No. Nope.
I think the only famous ska band is the Mighty Mighty Boston's.
Okay.
Anyways. All right. Well,
anyway, stop skanking about. I'm making a point. What?
You made your point.
Don't call him a skank.
No, that's
skanking
what
skanking is a dance
that's
move.
That's the dancing they do in ska music.
Where you do the double hop. Thank you, Jamie.
Yeah.
Jamie's old enough to know this.
That's right.
I'm an uncultured swine.
Well, there's our trip down memory lane and tying it all in to Casey DeSmith, who will be in net for the Dallas Stars tonight when they take on the Vancouver Canucks in Dallas. And again, playoff elimination on the line for the Canucks tonight. They'll be officially out with a regulation loss. We'll skip over the broadsheet for today. We'll go right to lineup notes and roster moves. And there's actually a lot to get into here today. The club announced today Jonathan Lekkerimäki reassigned to Abbotsford. Abbey has 5 remaining games. Of course, they're still on this incredible winning streak, 13 in a row. So 5 remaining regular season games. They'll have home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs. I think there's even still a possibility that they could get a first round bye in the Calder Cup playoffs. So look, the Calder Cup playoffs are always an odd beast because you never know if things don't go your way. It could be over in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
But certainly the way they're playing, and now you're sending Lekkerimäki down, Tom Volander potentially on the horizon. I think like Linus Karlsson would still be eligible to go down there and play. Not DPD, I don't believe, because I don't think he was papered down at the deadline.
I think he was.
Was he after?
I believe
so. So maybe DPD, but Mancini. So there's still reinforcements that you could send down. You're certainly hoping that you're setting up Abbotsford up to go on a deep Calder Cup playoff run with the success they're having right now. Having said that, I mean, Lekkerimäki sent down. You expect that ends the NHL portion of his campaign with only 5 games remaining for the Canucks. How should Canucks fans be thinking about Lekkerimäki, his season this year, his pro debut in North America, his first full season, full pro season in North America, and expectations for next season? Because it was a couple months ago you and I were talking, like, what should Lekkerimäki have to accomplish for Canucks fans to be really legitimately excited about his future going forward as early as next year? And, you know, job one was stay in the lineup, and he hasn't done that.
No.
So that doesn't mean there's no reason to be excited, but I think it is it should be important in how we view what we're expecting of him going forward into next season.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, look, the club was definitely hopeful when they promoted him. Was it right before the deadline? They were definitely hopeful that he would seize this job and sort of never go back, know, that this was the end of his tenure in the American League, and that going forward he was going to be a regular contributor, a regular player. So you're right, Arthur. Elias Pettersson was not
right
reassigned, was not papered down to preserve his Calder Cup eligibility. And I don't know that that's quite happened. I think we've seen flashes of it. He's averaged 12 minutes a game, which isn't too bad, all told. But, you know, the 5-on-5 minutes have been regularly, like, last. I know the underlying numbers are good, too, but if your underlying numbers are sparkling and your coach is working really, really hard to make sure you're not exposed to any type of difficult matchups, that doesn't tell us that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I wouldn't read into that. 3 goals, 6 points across 24 games. Not bad, right? Not bad, but I think we could see, and I think if Canucks fans are being honest with themselves and looking past, you know, the wildly cool stick flip, if you're willing to do that, I think it's fair to note that for the most part, he didn't look ready, right? How many times did you see Lekkerimäki protect a puck down low successfully? How many times did you see him win a 50-50 battle, right?
Yeah.
On the power play, he looked completely ready, especially on the flank. I thought he moved the puck really well, decisively, had actually impressive details. As a downhill attacking player, I think he looks ready. But in terms of contributing to the buildup and in terms of having the sort of strength required to actually play minutes 5-on-5 and be at least like fine defensively, right? I don't think that's in his bag just yet. Now, Coronado has been the comp that we've been coming back to pretty regularly here, Jamie, for next year. Coronado, 9 points in 34 games last season.
Yeah.
Right? So 6 points,
pretty
24
similar
games.
Yeah,
honestly,
it's basically the same.
Still pacing to be the sort of, you know, guy that we can dream on, fans can reasonably dream on, being, in my view, like a middle 6 spark plug contributor for next season, which this team desperately needs. He's going to need a big summer. He's going to need to add some heft, some size, and more than that, some functional strength to be able to pull off some of the like cutbacks on the wall that guys like Hoglander and Garland, that smaller forwards need to be able to do.
To play big minutes.
I get that there's disappointment. People want to watch him play. Would I have liked to see him, especially after the Canucks were mathematically eliminated, like play some big minutes? You know, like,
well, they haven't been mathematically eliminated. Oh, you mean like if they keep him up?
Saying.
And
like
I
if
see.
You scratch him one more game, are you mathematically eliminated? And then, but
really throw him into it? Yeah.
But I'd feel more strongly about that if you had a single guy playing top 6 minutes who I'm confident is going to play top 6 minutes for this team next season in the lineup. Right? I mean, Besser, like, other than DeBrusque.
Jake DeBrusque.
That's other than DeBrusque, you know, it's like Garland's extension eligible, which creates some uncertainty. You know, Besser's a UFA. Suter's a UFA. Mm-hmm. Atu Ratu probably not going to play in the top six. Guys like O'Connor and Dakota Joshua.
Hoglander.
Yeah. It's like those guys might play in your top six, but ideally they don't. You know, so it's not like they're missing an opportunity for him to build chemistry with Elias Pettersson or something like that. If that was the case, I'd be like, this seems silly. I guess that the other thing I'd note is why did they do it today? Why did they take him on the trip? You could have reassigned him Sunday. He could have played with Abbotsford on Sunday. So that makes it feel a little bit odd to me. Just the timing doesn't quite square. But again, because of the limitations in this lineup at the moment, I don't feel like he's missing out on a ton not playing these four or five games, especially if he's only going to play 7 minutes a night, five on five, versus, you know, 15 to 25 minutes a night down in Abbotsford.
Yeah, I don't have a problem loading up Abby and sending him down there and letting him be a big part of that and hoping you stretch it as long as you can with the Abbotsford Canucks.
And who knows what the level of disappointment in that room is. Like, we've seen this management group send young guys down too when things get a little tough.
Yeah.
To insulate them from rougher environments. I mean, maybe there's a belief too that a guy like Max Sasson is like just better suited to this moment where you just want to make sure that your group has like max effort the rest of the way. So lots goes into these types of decisions. I get that fans will be disappointed, but I think overall it's still a wildly successful first professional season for Lekkerimäki. And of course, the book's not written on it yet. A dominant performance in the Calder Cup playoffs would, you know, I think amp up our enthusiasm even further. And that's very much on the cards.
Just to wrap up quickly, as Demko starts tonight, this is per IMAC, who's on the trip. No Myers, Elias Pettersson, or Philip Hedel on the trip. So that means they don't have any extra D-man for this two-game road trip. Dallas tonight, and then against Colorado on Thursday. So just something to keep an eye on there. Playoff standings update. I'm not going to give you the odds. We all know what the odds are. They're very, very low. But just of note, we were talking the other day about, you know, they could be the team that has the best record but doesn't make the playoffs. So, i.e. the worst draft pick of the teams that don't make the playoffs. Calgary's now 4 points ahead of them with the same number of games played. And Calgary still has lots to play for, obviously, because they are very much alive in this one. So if you really want to look for that silver lining, might finish just behind Calgary and get a slightly better draft pick than Calgary.
Well,
it is.
Might finish behind Utah.
There you go.
So, I don't know. I think it should be very tough for Canucks fans to swallow.
Finishing behind Calgary?
Well,
yes,
and especially because it's like the team that's ended up being chased here isn't the St. Louis Blues, who finally lost. Left the door open.
Yep.
Many weeks too late. But the Minnesota Wild, the Canucks have the Minnesota Wild back on the schedule, like, still, right? And Calgary's at least, like, they have Anaheim before. They have that 4-point swing game against the Wild, and then they have the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah.
Like, there is absolutely a world where Calgary, it's not a hugely likely prospect, but Calgary's got a week of meaningful hockey left, and the Canucks don't.
Yeah.
And that should be galling, given the evident gap in talent on the Flames roster and the Canucks roster.
Give us a quick gambling update here.
The Canucks are heavy road dogs tonight, plus 175, Dallas Stars minus 210. Over-under set at 5.5.
That's the whiteboard for today. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows of these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. John Mattis from The Score joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.